Welcome, everyone. This is David
of Browntown
and Colin of Browntown,
and we are here presenting to you second installment of Bourbon in Browntown.
I am so excited.
Colin, what are we drinking today?
We are drinking Maker's Mark.
Mm.
We all should be probably familiar with this, and it's very delicious so far. We are also with Harambe of Browntown.
You might have seen him on our Twitter feed.
Yeah, and our Instagram. He eats bananas and capitalism.
On a daily basis. We appreciate you, Harambe, for everything you do. So welcome, everyone, to our second installment of Bourbon and Browntown. Today's episode is going to be focused on Donald Trump's first 100 days as president.
And hopefully also the last.
Yeah. I still can't understand how this man is president, but, you know, we're going to take it back a little bit to one of our first projects under Soapbox Production and Organizing.
Hashtag Soapbox and Trumpland, for y'all that don't know.
Where we ended up going to D.C. to witness the inauguration and sort of be a part of it. It was a wonderful experience. I had never been to Washington, but something that I really noticed being in Washington and being around not only Trump supporters, but being with anti-Trump advocates or, you know, other different organizations that are around the area. The Answer was there, J20 was there, and a few other organizations that were kind of trying to be heard in some way, shape, or form. Well, what I was able to hear a lot from his speech was a lot of people were like, oh my God, he was much more presidential this time. He's changed his diction, and because now he's president, so he's gonna start taking it seriously. Something that I realized, though, there was still a lot of conversation of carnage and destruction and poverty, and what was really starting to irk me, and like it was really difficult to contain my emotions while being around all these people, you know, because I'm like, I'm there clearly as an anti-Trump person.
He had a cape on that said resist,
right? I found it was nice.
It's beautiful.
But being around there and hearing him speak, and people are applauding, you know, and people are cheering, and there's also people in the back booing, and there was people, you know, chanting, not my president, when this man is clearly, whether you like it or not, the president of the United States, or sure, being sworn into the president of the United States.
Sure.
And I really felt that he tried to portray himself as this hero, as this, he's going to come in and all this BS, you know, stops right here and stops right now. As always, there's always conversation with how big things are. And so, interestingly, he, instead of talking about anything else, jabs at the size of his supporters or what have you. And then there's always that comparison with Obama, which, I mean, if whoever has the internet and you guys can Google how many people were at the Trump inauguration versus the Obama inauguration, there's clearly a difference. And we were there and it was raining, so please
It started raining right at noon, just you know, just FYI, right at noon, right when he got sworn in, it started raining.
It was God weeping for us. That's what I think.
A little bit.
It was very sad. But the greatest part about it was on the next day, you know, we had the Women's March. I was amazed. I don't think I've ever been in a place with that many people at once.
How many folks were there? I think it was like 2 million or more.
It should be.
They projected much under what it was supposed to be.
I think it was a million and a half.
Okay. Either way, a lot of folks.
Can you talk about this year's Women's March without talking about protesting Trump?
I think the two are connected, very much so. I think with the history of his documented sexual assault and the history of things he's said, and then the brief history of things he said he was going to institute and now has instituted, the two can't be disassociated.
Yeah.
Right? Especially you've seen in the activist resurgence this big push for women's rights and for feminism with groups that I previously haven't seen as radical or as feminist or as anything like that, which I think is great, but it's like it took this person, this man who's really like the face of sexism and white supremacy in this role to get to this moment. But yeah, I think Women's March, you know, could have existed independently of, you know, anything going on in the world. Like, sexism is still a very real thing.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like having a documented rapist as the president of the United States with no hyperbole. Yeah, you can't not talk about that and not come out in great numbers to act against that. So it was beautiful, but also just like you unpack why it's happening or why, you know, these huge numbers, why this big resurgence has happened. You look at, okay, man, this man in this system is unrelenting, and now it's at the helm of policy and of rhetoric.
No, and like in Chicago, I remember seeing Snapchat and seeing fools putting pictures up with their posters, about 250,000 people ended up showing up. There were so many people that they couldn't even march in the streets. Like, they had to just stay in one spot. And, you know, around the world, we saw London, Paris, Mexico City, you know, there were their own demonstrations of resilience, really. And I think it was very inspiring, especially after the prior day where it was a little hard to, you know, to enjoy too many things. The Women's March was really something that kind of brought a sense of hope for people, you know, not necessarily like, oh, Trump's the end of the world for us. But I think so many people were so disappointed in the way that it happened, you know, with the election. And to me, there was countless things that should have discredited Trump from becoming the president of the United States. But clearly that's not a thing. And so let's see, what's Donald been up to? Interestingly enough, Trump signed an immigration ban, which got a hell of a response. It ended up going to court, and all I know is that he lost 3 times. But still, he made that push, and he made that attempt to fulfill his promises, interestingly. And since has signed 66 different executive orders. Something that I would like to know is that there is this website, Business Insider of Politics. A writer by the name of Rebecca Harrington has been keeping up-to-date analysis on Trump's executive orders. So if anyone's ever interested, it's businessinsider.com. We'll probably have it at the bottom of this podcast, a link to it as well, you know, to keep yourself educated in the mix.
Speaking of, like, yeah, him being in this role now and having all this long history, back in when the pussy-grabbing comment came out and him talking to Billy Bush on that show, there was a huge backlash, right? I never thought that would be the end of it, and it wasn't, clearly. But Billy Bush gets fired on the spot, right? He gets fired right away, this random dude who, like, not that he did, you know, he should have got fired, he should have said something about it, he should have, like, stood up, but he was, like, a bystander, right? Which is problematic, but, like, he gets fired. But the man who said it becomes president. It's like, what's the issue there? Additionally, you know, this week, Bill O'Reilly gets fired from, again, a history of sexual assault, documented sexual assault. And he gets fired. He's off the air. But again, Trump's still president, right? And so it's like, in fact, these people are getting fired and being held responsible is good, but it's still in the climate of Trump, right? It's in the climate of people being angrier and mobilizing and being more sensitive, being more realer with issues that are facing women and gender inequality, which again is good, but it's like, because he's so terrible, he's bringing this huge backlash, but the backlash isn't against him, it's against other sexist white men in power, which again, I'm glad they're being brought down, but it's like, but he's straight though, he's good, it's his fault, but he's fine.
No, listen, when you're a star, they let you do it.
Apparently, all so. Right, Billy Bush wasn't that much of a star. He was like a half star or something, I don't know. Crazy. But it's just like, what is this? Like, things are being mobilized both in the government, outside the government, all these different spheres, which is great, but it's because we have this person at the helm who's like really at the intersection of all these isms, capitalism, sexism, yeah, white supremacy, like, you know, it's like all this shit. If it's just like, you know, he doesn't go down, everyone around him goes down. Well, some people around him goes down.
We would hope.
So it's interesting. And another thing with that is like O'Reilly gets fired and taken off the air. Cool, awesome. I'm all for it.
About damn time.
Right, but they pay him $10 million like to leave, or I don't know the details with that. But I know he got multiple $1 million to leave. So it's like same thing with dude with the NBA who said all shit against black people. He was forced to sell the team. So he made multi-million dollars selling the team. So like, yeah, like white man always wins. Like, okay, you can't own this team, but you get multi-million dollars. It's like, even when they lose, they win. What is this?
well, kind of jumping right back. So we're talking about a Trump's first 100 days. And interestingly enough, when he started, one of the things he really stressed on was this draining of the swamp.
Drain the swamp.
You know, all these damn politicians,
drain the swamp,
money, and I don't even know.
Drain the swamp.
But so he had Ryan Priebus. I don't even know if I know how to say his name.
I think. Who, okay, back up. He sounds like a Sith Lord.
Right?
Ryan Priebus.
Right? Chief of Staff,
like,
though.
He sounds like a Sith Lord.
It's okay.
I'm not saying that because it's Trump. I'm not saying that because all the connections we can make with the Empire, Star Wars,
and good versus
and
evil.
Trump's administration. I'm not like, I can do that, but it's like, It could be if Bernie was president, it'd be Bernie chief of staff, Ryan Priebus. Yeah. Like, what the fuck? Like,
the hell of a name. He was the RCN chairman since 2011, and that's kind of the only experience
RNC.
He had. RNC.
RNC. Not the cable company.
Whoops.
I wish you now like we have RCN, so I wouldn't even want that. Okay. He'd fuck up RCN somehow.
And so other than his chief of staff, you know, he has his chief strategist, Stephen K. Bannon. Who the hell is Bannon, Colin? Why should we care about him?
Probably another Sith Lord. Stephen K. Bannon, he, before he was selected, he was a chairman of Breitbart News, which is a alt-right wing, or you'll hear alt-right as well, news organization. And alt-right, just being neo-Nazi, right? White supremacist, very conservative news outlet.
Yeah, that's crazy. And he has since been removed from the National Security Council. He's still there and about, but he really doesn't get too much say, which is interesting. I'm not familiar. And then we got Michael T. Flynn, our national security advisor, who was under the Obama administration fired for insubordination. Hey-o.
And a couple other things. And then he has since been fired again under Trump's administration. I almost said Ron's administration. Under Trump's administration for kind of the same thing, giving the Vice President Pence incorrect information about his ties with Russia. And so with that, let's take it back. So Mike Flynn had this job before, got fired for very good reason, and then he was hired again. So imagine you're just a person in the world, and you're applying for a job at McDonald's, right? They interview you. And they say, I've seen your resume. You've been a cashier at McDonald's before. I say, yeah, I have. They say, why, what happened? I was fired for incompetence. They say, okay, you're hired. Like, imagine that scenario in any other place, any other time.
Maybe we just don't know what draining the swamp really means.
I guess
okay?
I don't. It's just ridiculous. Like, and that's another thing. I like there's tons of anti-Trump hashtags out in the universe now, which are great. But the one I think I like the most is don't normalize Trump, right?
Yes.
Because George Bush is terrible. You know, all these conservative presidents are bad. And other like neoliberal Democratic presidents too. But it's just like this isn't even normally bad. Like his whole administration, him himself, this whole experience we're having is not normal. It doesn't even go by the same procedures as this the presidency has gone through before, right? You like the president or don't like them. It's like these things are unprecedented, no pun intended, in ways that are problematic in new ways of being problematic.
Yeah.
He's hiring someone who had the job before and got fired for being a dumbass, and he does the same thing. Like, it's just like that's not okay in any other field, any other industry, but it's okay now. And then the same thing happens. It's ridiculous. But don't normalize Trump, I think, is one of the best things, because I feel like, and normal news needs to hear this as well, treating Trump and treating some of the bullshit that comes out of his administration as valid or as legitimate when it's not.
Yeah.
When lots of things are based on nothing, i.e. him saying Obama wiretapped him. It's just like, he just tweeted that one time on a whim. He's like, I heard this happen. It's like, no, you didn't.
But he was able to create an actual investigation of this. Like, his words. And I mean, and you see this, like, you're right. Like, he's hiring all these fools. You got Jeff Sessions, Attorney General. He's clearly against anti-immigration. He's a populist. You have John F. Kelly, the Department of Homeland Security, who's against women in the military. You got Ben Carson, who's Secretary of Housing and Urban Development, which is hilarious because I don't remember who exactly said it, but there was a statement made that was like, Dr. Carson feels like he has no government experience. He's never run a federal agency. The last thing he would want is to take a position that would cripple the presidency. And yet here is this guy, a surgeon, brain surgeon. Yeah, sure. You got to have some level of common sense to be able to do that thing. And even more. I mean, I would hope so. But then here's this guy who's like, you know what, I'm not going to do it. And then boom, you know what? Hey, you know, we're going to give housing and development to you.
Mom always said common sense ain't common.
Hey, and then we always have James Mattis, who's the Secretary of Defense. We also have Todd Rickett, hello, Cubs, right now as Deputy Commerce of Secretary, along with Wilbur Ross, whose actually net worth is $2.9 billion. There's to your draining the swamp. And Betty DeVos, the Education Secretary. I remember when there was the long struggle to see if she was going to make it. She's not going to make it. She's an idiot. Clearly, she has no idea what she's talking about. And then she ended up winning because Pence was a tiebreaker.
Yeah, and that's something I remember having this conversation with a friend of ours. Was like, I'm glad that, I mean, this whole situation is terrible. But with her, the example of Miss Betsy is that there's been plenty of, you know, resurgence of activism and resistance against his whole administration. People outside the government, right, and within as well, just not agreeing with him. But the fact that it even came to a tiebreaker vote in a position or in a nomination that's really the normally every administration gets who they want to bring in, pretty much without much, with much clapback. Pence had to beat the tiebreaker. Like, the fact that it was neck and neck that much gives me some kind of glimmer of hope. The fact that people who are hired in these off in office, senators, representatives are saying no. Even some, I'm kind of alluding to the healthcare bill. Even some within in the Republican Party are saying like, this isn't okay. No, for maybe reasons we don't agree with, but the fact that people are within the government are speaking out against him or voting against him, at least using what they can. So the Betsy DeVos situation was obviously, you know, problematic because of her and her being in this position, but at least it was neck and neck, and you know, Pence right. had to come in because that was kind of presented too. So I'm glad to see there's opposition, at least outside the government and within. And we'll get to that a little more later as well. But I'm trying to clamber onto something as far as glimmer of hope as far as this administration, how it's so problematic for America.
On that note, though, I do want to give a shout out to Elizabeth Warren, who was holding down the Senate for that DeVos vote.
Hey.
So we ain't going to back down, no how, no way.
No.
But yeah, we have our politicians doing their thing. We also have, so in the Trump cabinet, we have Kelly Cannaway, who started off as a campaign manager and then is currently the counselor to POTUS. So we see her every now and again. She freaks me out. I'm sorry. Like, she just, she really does. And she, and her always like, oh, he's just getting started, blah, 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 blah. Like, get out of here. And then we have Scott Prudis.
Pruitt.
My bad.
Scott Prius. No, he wouldn't drive a Prius. Do you know why? Because he doesn't believe in climate change. So let me unpack that a little bit. That takes much unpacking. So Scott Pruitt is the director of the Environment Protection Agency, the EPA.
Right.
And this man does not believe in climate change. Unfortunately, he's one of many who don't believe in climate change. It's a very documented thing of 99% or more scientists of the world believe and talk about. But no, this man is the director of the EPA, does not believe in climate change. I can't take credit for this metaphor, but that's like Pablo Escobar or Walter White from Breaking Bad or another drug czar, and put him here, leading or being the director of the DEA.
Yeah.
Like, this is the opposite person you want in charge of this thing. And this man is running this association, this organization. And it's just, it doesn't make sense. And again, how this is not normal. This is not, even if you disagree with presidents in the past, this whole administration, this whole political moment we're in is not normal. Don't normalize Trump, I think, is most crystallized this moment that we're in the most, because we're going to have to fight harder than we ever have before.
But I do feel that we're not the only ones who are, like, you know, realizing this or understand this. Like, since the start of his administration, the response in multiple ways has been seen, and not necessarily that we have to call it the resistance or what like have that, you. But for example, we have television. We have people like Stephen Colbert. We have people like Trevor Noah. You know, doing their things. Even Conan, that I'm not a huge fan of on TBS, did what he called Conan Without Borders, which I saw it on Facebook really quickly, and I was like, what's going on here? And what he actually did after, you know, Trump became president and what have you, and I think something was happening with an immigration ban, and I do know that there was a spike in ICE raids, which, for everyone who doesn't know, ICE is Immigration and Customs Enforcement, and they've been doing, or they were doing a little bit more raids around the nation. And so during this fiasco that was happening, Conan did this Conan Without Borders, and so he hired a complete team, basically, in Mexico City, completely in Spanish. And he did some of the show in Spanish, which is kind of funny, but it was predominantly in English. But the audience still understood, which kind of helped really without borders. You know, like, you do have Mexicans in Mexico who can speak English. You know, like, it's not...
What?
Surprise!
Get out of here.
Surprise!
They speak Mexican. That's it.
And then another one of the on television, SNL, has been doing a fantastic job.
SNL's been great.
Roasting. Killing.
I remember watching an interview with one of the producers, writers of SNL, talking about how, really just during the campaign in general, he's like, we have so much material, and like, this is good for, you know, bad for the country, but like, good for us at least. But also, they would write a sketch, they would write, you know, some stuff on maybe say Tuesday to shoot, obviously on Saturday. But then shit would change, or Trump would do something crazy like the next day, a couple hours later, and they have to like, oh shit, we need to go back to the drawing board, write another sketch, or position ourselves somewhat.
Change it, yep.
So they would be working all the time, because things would change so quickly. Comedy in general has just been very interesting in this past really campaign season, but until now, obviously, because there's so much to talk about and make fun of, really be kind of scared about. So on one end, comedians have all this material as far as things to put fun and talk about. But on another end, I've seen like a lot of comedians in the stand-up community and late night shows like Trevor Noah, more so the guests that come on are like who are also comedians, will like, they'll crack jokes, they'll make fun of Trump, they'll make fun of, you know, what's happening, but also be like, hey, but seriously though, like,
do you understand what's happening?
Shit's fucked. And I'm scared. Or they're more angry, but it's like much more of an emotional response to what's happening. And of course the jokes are there, but it's like when people are happy about the Bush years, you know, it's bad. Like,
he's going to South.
So we're in an interesting moment now in a lot of spheres and a lot of different disciplines, a lot of industries, but entertainment is something that's like, you got to pick a side, I feel like. We're here to entertain. We're here to make people smile and laugh and think critically. But that last part, think critically, you can't go without it anymore. You can't. People are dying. I don't mean just in the light of like police brutality. And like, I think critically is one of those most important parts now in all of entertainment, right? In all spheres, as far as comedy, drama, TV, podcast, what have you. You have to present material and conversations that they need not only to happen, but for there to be some action component to it. Because people are dying. People are being killed.
Or not only dying, but like the way I like to see it is like people's lives are being changed no matter what.
Sure.
And so like, sure, that could be as dramatic as a loss of life.
Yeah.
But for example, like with these ICE raids, like I know people at my job, for example, they're like scared shitless that they're going to get snatched and their families aren't going to know shit about them. It didn't become as real until one of the gentlemen who I work with, he actually asked me in my opinion about a lawyer that he was trying to get because, you know, he was meeting up with the immigration services and they were going to debate whether or not they deported him or not. He was literally freaking the fuck out. Like, whether I like him or not is not important. Regardless, it's just another human being, you know, and it's having empathy. It's having that. But as you were saying, with entertainment, it really has taken it. But I think with entertainment, you also have art. You know, you have a lot of comedy talking about it, a lot of comedians talking about it. But you also have these actors sort of like making these statements and making these, you know, positioning themselves in a world so that everyone else is aware of where they're at.
Sure.
And I also see a lot of critique about that. Like, oh, these liberal actors should stick to what they're good at and blah, 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 blah. But realistically, they're still people and they're still doing things. And that's
what's always odd to me. It's like, I don't want to hear a message from anyone who doesn't really know what they're talking about, whoever it is. But it's like, I remember I was watching John Legend on The Daily Show and he was talking about people tweeting him like, oh, like sick to singing music and singing love songs. Don't talk about woo woo. And he's like, but you can talk about it, not being a politician, but I can't just because I'm famous and I sing music. I still have like thoughts and shit. Like, what the hell? It's the weird thing. It's like Colin, I can tweet like, fuck Trump or like, you know, no Dakota Access Pipeline. And like, no one really care because no one knows who I am. And also I'm not like famous, but say I, you know, got famous for, I don't know, you know, making a TV show that went big. I don't know. But then I say something political, then it's like, oh, sick to
what you're good at.
Making 80s dramas. And it's like, but I can have an opinion now. You can? So, yeah, that's always a kind of weird argument.
Well, I mean, it's always interesting because, like, so on my point, though, is, like, I kind of feel that some people shouldn't give their, you know, opinions on certain things.
And, like, again, for me, it goes across the board for all people who aren't clearly thinking about something.
No, but, like, to say, like, you know, good example would be Patriots players who were invited to come to the White House because they were the NFL champions. And
ooh, I'm not a fan of the Patriots.
It's okay. And then there was a lot of conversation with a lot of these gentlemen were being like, I'm not going. Like, I don't want to go. Blah, blah, blah. This, that. And it ended up being that 33 players didn't end up attending the White House.
So many.
It's crazy. Including Tom Brady himself.
Yeah. I'm not a fan of Tom Brady or, again, like the Patriots. But I gotta commend him for that. Like, especially him.
I mean, maybe he just went just because he didn't need to go. But like,
he was just sick.
But I mean, so you're having these things. You're having this entertainment. You're having, you know, people saying things, people trying to be into it. But I feel like we are getting these actions, and so, you know, we've been having these protests, you know, around the nation, and from the beginning they were purely like, not my president, you know, post inauguration, like fuck Trump, dumb Trump. And they've been moving and they've been shifting. You've been having altercations with like the Berkeley incident where you have this dude trying to speak on some crap that no one really wanted to listen to, or around the nation, the day without an immigrant. which as well, it was all about Trump trying to move all these people from a place that we all call home. And simply just because we weren't born here, you know what I'm saying? It's like, I really like the nobody is illegal. It's like, because it's not.
No, no human is illegal.
Yeah, no human is illegal. And, right. and it's really that. But I think, as you were saying, you know, we're getting this entertainment. We're getting this comedy. We're getting this art. We're getting this music. I give a shout out to Tribe Called Quest coming back.
Hey.
And then J. Cole just dropped his album.
Hey.
Always on it. Kendrick dropped his album.
Hey, hey.
Always on it. It's just, and so like we're getting all these avenues of things that allow us to sort of go through in the day-to-day process, but also help us sort of
digest and like kind of grapple with these very real issues that are affecting us in really very real ways.
Wonderful.
It's not just rhetoric. It's not just like, oh, he said this was terrible, but like, that doesn't affect me. Like, no, it's affecting you because he's inserting that rhetoric and what's behind that rhetoric in policy. It's affecting your life.
Yeah. Right? And so it's like, but you really right now have Trump versus the world. You know, our commander in chief is out here tweeting on the daily.
He doesn't tweet. What are you talking about?
He's what?
Tweeter in chief.
Tweeter in chief. I would love to call
him grabber in chief.
It's so crazy. Like, this guy uses Twitter in a way that I don't
use Twitter that much. Like, I'm like a busy guy. I don't have that much time on my hands, but like, I still be on there tweeting stuff, whatever. He's a president. He tweets much more than I do.
He's like, shout out to my sore losers. Like,
and to my haters.
To my hate.
It's like, are you a rapper? Like, what? Are you 50 Cent? What's happening?
It's like, and it's hilarious. I like, to a certain degree, I'm just like, he understands that he has haters. No.
Here's the thing.
We hating on him right now. So
for y'all that don't know, hashtag ShinyNA, I'm doing an academic project and we're doing a documentary project, Soapbox, on drill rappers and activists in Chicago. So point being, I've listened to a lot of drill music lately and more than is healthy, and looking at a lot of like drill artists' tweets. If you don't know, drill is a subgenre of gangster rap that took place in Chicago. But like, He tweets in a different language, but saying the same thing as lots of drill rappers. Like, fuck the ops, woo woo. He says the same thing, but in like rich white man language. Like, it's insane. It's not different. It's not different.
But Colin, for everyone out there, we're 100 days in. What the fuck can we do? What do I do? I'm a dude sitting on my TV watching CNN, and I'm getting sad, so I change the channel. But really, what is that we should be doing dealing with this sort of shit?
You see what your grassroots social justice organizations are doing.
All right, let's take a step back. I know no grassroots organizations. I know nothing. I have a cell phone and a TV and internet. What can we do? How do we do things? Where do we go from here?
Find out who represents you. Most
wonderful.
Basic thing.
There you go.
Your alderman, your state rep, your senator, what have you. Find out who represents you in Congress and contact them. Call them. Find out what bills are on the table or going to be on the table, and call them and get your voice heard that way. So there's that. There's mobilizing people to also do that.
Mm-hmm.
Google, try to find those organizations that are keeping the politicians you're calling accountable for making these votes and for getting these bigger issues to the forefront. I'm a big fan. I'm always a component of using electoral politics as well as the grassroots and the direct actions and the angry, more organic, organized forms of protest as well. So I think we need them both. So call your state rep, but also get in the streets and block some traffic. And
right. But please understand the difference between a protest and a riot. Okay. Yeah. Like, I think something that's been interesting in the last one I was able to attend is as people were being aware about not getting into confrontations. Like, there was a lot of conversation. A lot of people be like, people are saying something to you, don't say anything back. Just keep walking. You know what I'm saying? Like, sure. This, that, and the fifth. And, like, really be able to understand the problem. You know, as you said, educate yourself. Who is our people? Who can we talk to? ACLU, for anyone who doesn't know.
American Civil Liberties Union.
Love you, Colin. You see that? That's why he's my boy.
Teamwork.
Teamwork makes a dream work. But ACLU, for example, you can jump onto their newsletter. And they email very constantly, change.org as well. It's a much more of a global petition site. But there are these things out there, you know, and it's a click away. It's a button away. And I love the way you put it. It's like get active.
Yeah.
What does Kendrick say?
Try to get active.
And go out and get active. Call your district, you know, donate time to other things.
Find that woke friend of yours and just pick his or her or their brain.
Yeah, because listen, and especially with these last few days, you know, the commander in chief over here combating terrorism by bombing the shit out of Afghanistan. And then not only Afghanistan, but he's getting stuff with North Korea and like these. Everyone's trying to talk about nuclear warheads and Syria. Stuff. North Korea and Syria.
I'm saying Syria was the main, like the main, the rite of passage as a U.S. president, right? And that's one of the odd things I feel like has been dissected, at least in the mainstream, is like he bombed Syria, not with really of a plan. We're critiquing him for that, which is fine, but it's like. When does this end? When does this U.S. militarism end? And not that we thought it was going to end under Trump by any means, but I guess my point is it's him bombing Syria was surprising for what he said years ago about not getting involved with Syria. But I feel like you only really see on like the left people critiquing him for it and really comparing him to any other president who probably would have done the same thing. Mm-hmm. Like Hillary commended him for this. Like if Hillary was in office, she would have done the same thing. She's a warmonger as well. So as much as this is a Trump thing and you know, fuck him for all these different reasons, really, most folks would have got that job, probably would have done the same thing, because that's what you do as a U.S. president, right? You bring this idea of militarism and violence abroad. And like, yeah, Assad's doing terrible things as well, but the thing that got Trump to do this was pictures of like the aftermath of things Assad was using on his people and these children with these terrible defects. It's like, that's not only happening in Syria. Like, we're gonna bomb the whole world? Like, no. And also been doing that without a plan. So he's been commended, and the news takes it. It's like, oh, like, good, he took action, whatever. It's like, when is taking action going to look like something other than bombing somewhere? Or instituting stop and frisk. He took action against Assad. Good for him. It's like, no. We always have to resort to bombing folks from abroad. And like just using that as an example. Like, this is another extension of state violence. Obviously, on a global scale this time, but... So is stop and frisk. So is oppressive police state. So is all these things that make people of color, poor folks, have to really commit what's considered a crime and really not a harm, do these things that people get incarcerated with and beget this system of incarceration. It's like this, him bombing Syria wasn't him bombing Syria. Him bombing Syria was an extension of a structurally violent U.S. state. There's other examples of this here and abroad. And so it's just, we have to unpack this in a more comprehensive look at how the U.S. state operates, not just Trump, but the U.S. state operates the government, right?
Yeah. And as Tupac Shakur, you know, said, death is not the greatest loss in life. The greatest loss in life is what dies inside while still alive, you know, so hey. Never surrender. And that's where we're at. And, you know, that's why we try to educate ourselves. That's why we try to put time when we have it, because that's also another thing. Like, I can't go protest every day. I could if I would, but I got rent to pay.
Self-care is important.
I got groceries to pay, but you know, that never surrender is really important. So stay active, stay informed, stay black, stay brown, stay queer.
Stay tuned, stay turned.